It's a celebration here in the studio because the CyberWork with InfoSec podcast is a winner. Thanks to the Cybersecurity Excellence Awards for awarding us a Best Cybersecurity Podcast gold medal in our category. Yeah. We're celebrating, but we're giving all of you the gift. We're once again giving away a free month of our InfoSec skills platform, which features targeted learning modules, cloud-hosted cyber ranges, hands-on projects, certification practice exams, and skills assessments. To take advantage of this special offer, for CyberWork listeners, head over to infosecinstitute.com/skills or click the link in the description below. Sign up for an individual subscription as you normally would. Then, in the coupon box, type the word CyberWork, CYBERWORK, no spaces, no capital letters. And just like magic, you can claim your free month. Thank you once again for listening to and watching our podcast. We appreciate each and every one of you coming back each week. So enough of that. Let's begin the episode. Welcome to this week's episode of the CyberWork with InfoSec podcast. Each week, I sit down with a different industry thought leader, and we discuss the latest cybersecurity trends, how those trends are affecting the work of InfoSec professionals, while offering tips for those trying to break in or move up the ladder in the cybersecurity industry. It's no secret that we like talking about red teaming here on CyberWork, and why not? It's a fun topic. Our episode on how to become a pen tester was also quite popular with listeners, so today we're going to put some chocolate in that peanut butter and talk about purple teaming, the tag team combination of red team offensive security and blue team pen test defensive security, and figure out the best methods of stress testing our security departments with our guest. Luke Williardson currently serves as a security consultant with Embersec, a Bylight company. He began his cybersecurity career in the United States Navy, where he trained to conduct offensive security operations for the Department of Defense. He participated in daily computer network exploitation missions in support of national intelligence requirements and in support of protection against foreign nation state-sponsored hackers. After separating from the United States Navy, Luke joined the startup company IronNet Cybersecurity, where he conducted penetration tests and vulnerability assessments, while also providing product development support and threat hunting capabilities. Following his time at IronNet, Luke worked as a director of a security consulting firm where he specialized in red teaming, penetration testing, intelligence gathering, threat hunting, digital forensics, and technical writing. I did a little cooking on the side. Luke has an MS degree from Eastern Michigan University and is CISSP, OSCP, and CEH certified. Luke, thanks for joining us today on CyberWork.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's a very impressive roster of things that you've done over the years. So you know, we want to sort of start out by breaking down, where you got started, where you got the bug, and so forth. So. Let's start with how and where did you first get interested in computers and tech? How far back does that go? And when did your journey sort of move specifically into things like vulnerability assessments?
Sure. So, my father brought home a Packard Bell 486 with MS-DOS when I think I was in kindergarten. And he taught me how to use the command line to set up and play games and mm-hmm. how to use an MS-DOS-based word processor. Yep. We had a dot matrix printer as well.
Jumpman, .1, .1. Yeah.
So I've had a love affair with computers since, I was very little. And
okay. So this has been with you the whole time then. Yeah.
I would say that.
Yeah.
So, I ended up in the Navy. As you mentioned, working a variety of cybersecurity-based intelligence missions. And I ended up earning my bachelor's degree in cybersecurity and my master's degree in technology studies while I was on active duty. And so, I walked out of the Navy and I felt like I was ready to roll.
Cool. Okay. So, tell us about your development within the security sphere. Tell us more about the U.S. Navy and sort of what you learned there and how it sort of transitioned to, red teaming and pen testing and so forth.
Sure. So, while I was in the Navy, I definitely observed some pros and cons during my 6 years of active duty service. But I would say that the training provided for those who qualify is probably the best schooling that I've ever had. I was in an accelerated program that covered everything from operating system basics, logic, to introductory and intermediate programming, networking, network security, offensive security, and military intelligence methodology. And while I was going through this school, my test scores ended up qualifying me to pursue another school that was offered in Maryland. And so the goal of this course was to prepare you to conduct offensive security. And so, you know, I, following, you know, about 2 years of training, both, you know, in the classroom and on the job, I was ready to run operations.
Okay. So that was a pretty fast ramp up then, wasn't it?
It was very fast. You know, I went from, you know, I was someone that had limited programming knowledge and, you know, was comfortable on the command line, you know, when I came in to, you know, it was almost like a crash course in everything you could ever need to know in cybersecurity.
Right. Yeah. So those were fairly intense sort of days and schedules, I would imagine, in terms of accelerated learning and whatnot.
They were, they certainly were. You know, I recall many nights, you know, studying with my classmates, you know, while everyone else was out having fun, we were still studying.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And you were, and it all paid off. So yeah, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the big focus of the show. We like to talk about, you know, not only sort of your journey, but also like careers in general. And since your career thus far seems to be focused primarily on different aspects of vulnerability assessment, could you tell me a little bit about the day of a vulnerability assessor? Like, what does the average day look like? What are some tasks that you're doing every day? What are things that you need to be really good at to thrive in a profession like this?
Sure. So, I will say that part of, you know, doing business in this sector is analyzing how your peers are doing it, you know, and, you know, I've done a lot of research into what other companies are putting out. And so, just a caveat that my experience may differ from others' experience. But okay, for me, you know, a typical day starts off with maybe 30 minutes to an hour of threat research. You know, what's the latest ransomware that's come out? How does it work? You know, are there new vulnerabilities that are out there? That kind of stuff.
It's basically the human version of like your malware, anti-malware doing its updates every morning or whatever. Sure, like, yeah. You're like, okay, what's out there? What's happening next? Okay. Yeah,
this is definitely a job where, you know, things can change in a day and you need to stay on top of it every day.
Any particularly crazy things happened in the last couple of days here that you have noticed?
Well, there was a very large DDoS attack. I think it was maybe 2 days ago against, you know, many carriers in the US and as well as, you know, I think Facebook and, I can't remember everyone who was a victim, but it was huge. And there were a lot of major services that were offline. And so, you know, reading the after action on that, you know, how did that work and everything has been, I need to read more personally. Okay.
More research needed.
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, you know, once I've kind of done my day's reading, catching up, there's usually a little bit of checkup or maintenance on our infrastructure.
Okay.
If you can imagine, you know, we have all these security controls and standards that we're telling you need to apply to your systems. Well, when we're conducting an assessment of, you know, another organization's systems, you know, their data is going to have to pass through our systems. And so we had to apply that same rigor to, you know, the infrastructure we're using to assess our clients. And so, you know, just making sure everything's up to date, patched, that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
And then, oh, go ahead.
No, by all means. Please. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I keep jumping in for some reason. No problem.
So once I've kind of finished with that, I might take a look at, you know, any potential new clients or business development opportunities that we have. And then of course, you know, the greatest part of my day is doing the actual work for our clients.
Yeah. Okay, so what does that entail necessarily, or what are some of the sort of main? Cause I know it's different for every client, but like, what are some of like the main structures of things that you do for your client?
Oh, sure. So, you know, with Embersec, we're doing vulnerability assessments, penetration testing, red teaming, and further beyond for clients that have specific niche requests, maybe something like purple teaming, you know, and that is just going to involve, you know, we try to be in constant communication with our clients and keep them up to date on everything we're doing. So there's going to be some collaboration with our clients as well as, you know, diving in, getting technical, as well.
Okay. We've had several episodes on red team operations because it's super exciting and there's lots of like cool ethical considerations you can get into. And we've had a few penetration testers on as well. And those have been very popular, but we haven't really had a chance to talk to someone who knows about purple team operations, which is this combination of red team and blue team or pen test operations. So for those of us who are new to the whole, this sort of alternate color coding system, how does a purple team work as opposed to just a red or just a blue? And how do you explain this back and forth between red and blue team work, what they contribute to each other in terms of vulnerability knowledge and the way they work in tandem?
Sure. So purple teaming is basically conducting a red team operation or penetration testing while collaborating with, you know, your client's blue team.
Okay. So you're providing the red team and they're providing their sort of in-house penetration testing team. Is that what it is?
So typically they're providing the blue team.
Right.
They're security guys who are going to be, you know, conducting monitoring or responsible for security policies and, you know, the day-to-day of keeping your enterprise secure, both at a technical and a management style level.
Okay.
So on the red side, we're going to target areas that are maybe defined by the client as a special need. And we're going to usually execute a variety of use cases or attacks or techniques, knowing full well that the blue team is watching. And so, you know, our goal is to achieve compromise through this variety of test cases. The blue team's goal is to evaluate their security controls and their procedures. So instead of conducting red teaming or penetration testing and presenting the client with like a report of, you know, what we found after the engagement is over, we are communicating, collaborating like on a real time or at least a day-to-day basis.
Okay. So there's a little more sort of internal external communication than, whereas the red team has got kind of a black box element where you're sort of, you know, you're not necessarily telling them all that you're doing until that you've already done it and then you've reported on it.
Exactly.
Okay. So can you give me some, I don't know if there are concrete examples, but some examples of the types of vulnerabilities that you might miss by doing just blue team or just red team operations? Like how does this double layer system do its work better?
Sure. So one that comes to mind immediately for me is, in a past, gig, I was, assessing the network boundaries between an organization's corporate enterprise and their secure data enclave. I actually can't remember if it was PCI or PHI or what was in the secure enclave that required it to be segregated from the rest of their enterprise. But they only allowed like very specific types of communications between these two network segments. And so earlier in the engagement, I had gained access to an administrator system. And we found that this administrator system happened to be allowed bidirectional SSH communications. SSH is a secure shell. It's a secure encrypted remote shell.
Okay.
Used by administrators. So we found that, you know, there were two pipes that this administrative system was allowed to communicate into this secure enclave. It was SSH and then SMB, which is a Microsoft protocol for Windows-to-Windows communications. Sorry if that's a little overly technical.
Please. No, I appreciate the clarifications because we get people from all different sort of levels of knowledge and people who are just looking in for the first time to see if they're interested in this. So yeah, please feel free to break it down that way.
Sure. So, you know, the client's engineers were confident that, you know, we wouldn't be able to use these ports to gain access to the enclave. But we were able to demonstrate that we could deliver, you know, malware over SMB, and the malware delivered had nowhere to go. It had no one to talk to except for on this single pipe that was used for SSH, the other communication protocol we were talking about. And so we're able to upload malware and have it communicate over the port reserved for SSH. And if their firewall was configured to you know, only allow unilateral communications, or if it were performing stateful inspection, which is where it doesn't just look at, you know, the ports of a communication. It looks at, you know, the data that's actually being exchanged and can recognize it as invalid. So essentially that gap was identified, and their blue team was watching it happen. And they were saying, you can't do this. This, you know, you're not going to get in this way. And so we got in that way. And then we figured out a way to prevent that from happening again. And, you know, it was a great boon to them to, you know, to find out that this was one of two routes that we found we could get in, get unauthorized access to their secure enclave. The TLDR for that is that
that was awesome.
The blue team had protections in place that were intended to only allow a few necessary communications between their corporate zone and their secure zone. And the red team demonstrated that they could piggyback on these necessary communication protocols to get access to this restricted secure zone.
Yeah.
And then the blue team was able to write a script to both detect this type of activity, and they were able to adjust their firewall rules to prevent this type of attack from happening to them in the future.
So in our pre-show, you know, when we were emailing back and forth and stuff, the phrase stress testing your defensive team came up. Is that basically what you're talking about here, that you're sort of testing their assumptions of how safe they are in real time like that?
Definitely. You know, and I think another example that captures this is that, and this one is less technical.
Okay.
So on the red side, for one client, we tested about 50 or so different ways, known ways to bypass an endpoint security product.
Okay.
And then execute, you know, malicious code on a client system. And the blue team observed each attack in their endpoint security console, and they, you know, their endpoint security product caught about 9 out of 10 of these bypass attempts. And so for the attempts that were not caught or blocked by endpoint security, the blue team was able to develop strategies for alerting on and preventing like these additional security bypasses. So I would definitely call that stress testing.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can stress test a defensive team. I think purple teaming is definitely one of these methods, but really I think any offensive security style work can contribute to stress testing.
Right.
There's such a vast amount of technology that modern companies are implementing or should be implementing to prevent intrusion, and stress testing, it makes sure that things are all working as intended and we're detecting, preventing the type of issues that can compromise your organization's security or integrity. Companies are deploying firewalls, SIMs, endpoint protection, endpoint detection and response, antivirus, email filtering, so much more. And so stress testing is just, we'll make sure things work as they're supposed to, you know?
Yeah.
Does your email filtering work? Well, let's craft a phishing email with a malicious payload and see if it gets blocked.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, this sort of brings up in my mind, like, this seems like such a natural combination, this having the red team happening in the moment, but also in this sort of active collaboration stance with the blue team. I mean, and it seems like such a natural handshake, and I don't feel like purple teaming is like the law of the land. So I'm curious why people don't do it this way more often. Like, I usually hear like, they just had a red team attack against us, or we're just using our blue team for this. Like, this seems like such a natural combination. Like, why is this not sort of standard operating procedure, or is it? Maybe I just haven't heard it.
Well, I think that purple teaming is potentially a label that isn't in everyone's vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, you know, last year I was conducting a penetration test, for a fairly large client, you know, and they said, hey, we want to buy a penetration test from you. And then they said, we want our blue team to sit and side saddle with you guys and watch you guys as you do it, so that we can see if our protections are adequate. And I'm like, oh, you mean purple teaming?
Ah,
So I think that it's being done in other ways than, you know, the you know, if you Google purple teaming, you know, there are ways that people are doing similar activities outside of that okay. particular definition. But I don't think that people who want a purple team engagement, that those are the only people who have done a collaborative okay. red-blue style assessment before. And I think that probably maybe in at least a third of the engagements that I work, there is that kind of real-time collaboration going on.
Okay. So a lot of what people call red teaming is something closer to purple teaming, maybe?
Sure. There is kind of a more refined purple teaming methodology that you can try to follow. But that doesn't mean that you can't reap the benefits of the collaborative nature of purple teaming itself, you know, without calling it purple teaming.
Okay, so I guess to turn things around then, what are the actual benefits to doing just a straight red team attack, like, and not having the, you know, like, what are you looking for differently, you know, if by not putting your pen testing department, you know, as in part of the operation?
Sure. So, you know, one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, when testing, we're testing more than technology. We're also testing people. And so you know, if the blue team or the defensive people, if they don't know that we're coming, then with a red team assessment, potentially we can assess the response of, okay. of the client. You know, how is their alerting? Are the proper personnel being alerted? And, you know, how is their call tree structure set up? Are they prepared to react to this? Because they don't know that. In a true red team style engagement, they don't know that it is, you know, consultants or contractors that are in their network. They just know that someone's in their network. And so they can really assess their own, you know, in-house people and policies a little better, maybe with that style of red team engagement.
So in those cases, are they sort of generally told there might be a red team attack sometime down the line, or are they told absolutely nothing and just left to sort of determine?
You know, it varies client to client. There's no right way, I think, because different clients are operating at different levels of maturity. And, you know, maybe the security manager wants his people to know that his or her people to know that, you know, something's coming, you guys should be ready for it. Because part of the reason we're getting this test done is we want to pass this audit, or we want to make sure we're ready for this audit. And so you guys and girls get yourselves ready for this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So moving on from the sort of like nuts and bolts of this to the career aspect, we always like to talk about career strategies. So what are some first steps for people who might want to understand and get involved with these types of vulnerability assessment positions as like a career, you know, since red and even red team and even pen testing positions feel like kind of advanced level skills to me, like what are some of the first steps you would take to sort of put you on this path?
Sure. So this is my own personal opinion. And you can take this or leave this, but okay. I think that the first thing a person should ask themselves if they want to get into cybersecurity work, even just vulnerability assessments, is, are you comfortable working with a command prompt or shell? If that's something that you aren't familiar with, you should study it and see if it's something that maybe you have the knack for. But some people they see the command prompt and they see, you know, the little flashing cursor and they know they're supposed to type something and that's overwhelming and too much.
Right.
And you know what? That's
too
okay.
many choices.
There are other positions in cybersecurity that don't have, you know, you don't have to, you know, get on the keyboard in that way. There's, you know, you can work in security policy and auditing or, you know, a 100 other areas.
Risk assessment or yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So if you are comfortable on the command line, then I would say, you know, you should pursue some entry level certifications that will help you build. You want to build a foundation in both networks and security.
Okay.
So, you know, and in my opinion,
so like a net plus security plus.
Yes. I was just getting ready to say security plus net plus, and maybe the CEH.
Okay.
they're great entry-level courses that will really help you build a strong foundation, both offensively and defensively, and kind of just understanding networking and information technology.
Okay. Is there any sort of like hands-on, you know, type lab situations or whatever you'd recommend, or sort of like ways, you know, apart from just the study? I mean, does the study give you sort of hands-on elements, or like, yeah, where, you know, especially if you don't really have like, you know, a support system around you or whatever, like what are some ways that you can sort of like test this out in your bedroom?
Sure. So, there's an organization that provides free training called Cybrary, that I have gotten a lot of use from, as well as, you know, I guess, you know, back in 2009, when I was just starting to learn about this stuff, you know, I walked into a Barnes and Noble and I bought a Security Plus book. Mm-hmm. And I read it cover to cover, and that was great. You know, I learned a lot. I mean, yeah. For me personally, but I definitely think there's a lot of online resources available out there. Now, you know, I haven't had to step back to that, to the, what I would call introductory
right.
stuff in a long time. So, but I can definitely say that Cybrary and there's some others that are similar as well as reading.
It's my opportunity to say infosecinstitute.com/skills, enter code CyberWork for 1 free month. We also have a skills page. So, but yes, no. So yeah, there are those options out there. And I guess we're just more than anything, you know, more than sort of like, you know, the programs or whatever, we want people to sort of understand that this is not an unattainable thing, and that it's not like the sort of barrier to entry is pretty low. Like you say, if you get a book out of the library or you test out with some of these skills assessments, like you can get a pretty good sense early on whether this is a thing you'd be comfortable with doing for the rest of your life, right?
I would certainly agree. And to expand on that even further, you know, I was, prior to, you know, going to college and getting in the service, I was a cashier at Walmart for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, self-study and, you know, of course the opportunities the military provided me, but, you know, it's not something that people can't get into. It really is an approachable field.
Okay, so moving to the other side of the coin, you know, there's the hard skills, obviously, like I said, the command line and the, you know, use and the actual sort of like, you know, scripting and coding and, you know, defensive things. What are some of the soft skills that people who do red teaming and blue teaming need to have to really succeed?
Oh, sure. So one soft skill that I think is probably like the most important is creativity or ingenuity. Mm-hmm. Sometimes gaining access to the machine that your client is, you know, worried about and they want you to assess, it's going to require you to think outside the box. You might have to combine several different hacking techniques, or maybe you might have to invent your own new technique. That's an amalgamation of you know, different coding languages and maybe some kind of Windows-based vulnerability. It could be anything. And the more creative that you are, the more likely you're going to find success, I think.
Okay.
Another soft skill, I don't think writing is a soft skill, but communication.
Yes.
We could call that a soft skill.
Sure. Sure.
And as a member of a security team, either working, you know, for your own organization or as a consultant to other organizations, you need to be able to effectively communicate to your stakeholders, you know, what is the problem? How do you fix it? And
right.
To follow that up further, I think that compassion is actually a key soft skill. You know, you're often the bearer of bad news.
Yes.
You know, yeah, your conclusions can affect people in unforeseen ways. You know, mm-hmm. if you discover and report on gross negligence within a certain IT, a department of IT, for your client, that could cost someone their job. Or,
right.
You know, if you have to tell somebody that there's no way they're going to pass their audit unless they make, you know, an exceptional amount of changes, you need to be compassionate and respectful. You know, remember that you're talking to people on the other end of the world.
Yeah, that's not, unfortunately, not a given for people who might be, you know, just interested in the sort of ones and zeros of the job. So, yeah, yeah, you got to be able to break, you know, have almost a doctor, you know, bedside manner-like rapport, I imagine.
Yes, you really do.
Yeah, and write a report. So for small and medium businesses or any organizations that don't already have a comprehensive vulnerability security protocol, I mean, obviously, huge enterprises are going to have, you know, full teams or whatever. Do you have any sort of advice to begin starting something like that for a smaller organization? What's the best way to assess, you know, the level of like vuln assessment and regular stress tests your company might need and also can afford?
Honestly, each organization, every business organization, enterprise is unique. Mm. The solutions and you know specifications that work for one organization may not work for another. And this isn't a pitch for EmberSec specifically, but there's so many Please. Good firms out there today. Mm-hmm. You should look to professionals that can help you within your budget. You know, here, I would say that some things to consider just, you know, from the get-go, however, are like, what are your IT resources? What do you use them for? How much do you have, mm-hmm. you know, and what kind of data is stored on that? And what is the risk of you losing that data? And if you're capable of asking yourself all of those questions, then you'll be better served finding, you know, the specific group that can help you. But if not, there are professionals out there who can analyze all that for you and tell you what you need and how to do it.
Okay. So we already talked about certification, so I'll skip over that. But one of the things I always like to ask about, because, you know, while many of our guests have, you know, known what they wanted to be for a long time, some people are, you know, get a little stuck in their current job, you know, whether they're, you know, they find themselves in their fifth year as a, you know, in a call center or whatever, like, but people who are thinking of transitioning over to this role, what are some actions that they could start today or tonight that would move them closer to this type of work? I mean, it sounds like obviously getting a book or doing some sort of free skills testing. Do you have any other sort of thoughts on sort of moving the mindset as well as, you know, just the, you know, the raw data?
Sure. Well, I mean, my skills come from, you know, a variety of on the job military experience, on the job consulting experience, a bachelor's degree in cybersecurity, a master's degree in technology studies, self-study, certification prep. You don't need all that to get into cybersecurity. You don't need to walk over to your recruiter's office and take an oath.
Right.
But you do need to have goals. And
yes,
I think a worthy goal, you know, let's say you are comfortable on a command line, you understand the knowledge body of Security Plus, Net Plus. I think a worthy goal is to attain the CISSP and to commit the proper hours and to study for it. To me, the CISSP is the holy grail.
Okay.
If you have a CISSP, you understand the basics of almost all of the technology you're going to run into within business IT, and you're going to understand how an information security program works. And with that foundational knowledge, you know, all that's left is for you to specialize. And right. A lot of times, if you have that foundational knowledge, there's a lot of firms that will let you right in the door and say, we're going to teach you, you know, your niche over here.
Okay.
It's a fantastic certification, and I'm not being paid to say this.
Right. Yeah, no, that's awesome, because, well, I mean, that's really great to hear, because, you know, we've had back and forth with certain guests about whether certs are important at all, or whether education, or whether you just got to go out and do it, or, you know, we're not even looking at bachelor's anymore, or we're not even looking at this or that. But it sounds like there's also like different reasons for doing Sec Plus and Net Plus, in terms of like that gets you the knowledge you need, but like CISSP like really sort of puts you on another level and allows you to sort of, it's almost like becoming like a doctor, like a specialist, like a vascular surgeon or something like that. Like you have, you know, that sort of upper level like, you know, all the tech that you're going to need to know or whatever, which is different from, you know, like everyone, you know, a lot of people have security pluses that aren't using them, I suppose. But once you get to that level of knowledge, I imagine that it's, you're sort of already on the career track a little better, right?
Certainly. Certainly. And I think that, you know, in the defense of those who argue that certs aren't necessary, it's really the body of knowledge behind the certification that's necessary. Right. You don't necessarily need a CISSP to be a good, you know, worker in cybersecurity, but the knowledge that is required for you to have passed that test is certainly, I think, going to make you good at your job.
Yeah, and it's also going to sort of improve your, you know, because you were saying about the sort of creativity and the inventiveness. Like, if you know every, you know, it's like being a musician and knowing every single, you know, the cycle of fifths backwards and forwards, like, you can just do your job better when you have all of that sort of knowledge at hand, right?
I agree.
Yeah. So what, you know, I guess I didn't have this on the question sheet, but you said, you know, like, getting to different goals in life. Do you have sort of a 5-year goal for yourself? Like, where do you want to move up from here? Are there, you know, larger opportunities that you're looking for, or way to take, you know, Bylight or Embersic, you know, to higher places?
Sure. So, you know, you know, my 5-year plan is really to see Embersic soar. Mm-hmm. I think that we're refining the procedures and what we think makes up a quality service. And we're going above and beyond. So for one example is, like, with a common vulnerability assessment, you know, usually you're going to run a vulnerability scanner in a client's environment, and you're going to read the report on all the vulnerabilities, and either some firms give you the automated report, or, you know, you're going to write your own report. But because the security landscape has changed in recent years, we're including a full Active Directory audit for users that use Microsoft, and we're looking for misconfigurations, because recent trends have showed that you are more likely to be, you know, owned or hacked or compromised because of something like a misconfiguration within Active Directory, rather than I didn't patch this system and I got hit by this exploit, CVE 2016- whatever. We're really trying to be a cut above in analyzing what security trends are and providing a service that meets traditional needs, as well as where we currently stand and where, you know, where the future looks like it's going to be. And so for me personally, I'm spending a lot of time evaluating, you know, what makes up a security program? What are the common threats that affect these security programs? And how is this changing over time? Because I want to build or help build a business that is resilient and always current. So, you know, it's my passion right now.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. And I'm also couldn't be more thrilled that you mentioned Active Directory misconfigurations, because I just this morning I was editing a couple of Active Directory, you know, hacking misconfiguration walkthroughs that are going to be on our website, resources.infosecinstitute.com. By the time your episode will be up, they'll already be on there. So everybody jump over there. Okay. We've got three sort of step-by-step walkthroughs of how, you know, these things can be exploited and what to do about them and stuff. So as we wrap up today, do you have any final thoughts or advice about proactive security practices or where it's going in the future?
Sure.
I mean, we sort of talked about that already, but I mean, I'm thinking more in terms of, like, more of a crystal ball thing, you know, like, do you see, like, sort of big tectonic shifts coming, or is it, as you said, with Embersec, that you're just sort of looking to sort of, like, refine the process more?
You know, I'll just say this. I really think that proactive security is absolutely crucial. Mm-hmm. We get new reports of viruses, Trojans, ransomware, you name it. We get it every single day of the year. And the hackers in the world are prolific and determined. And it really, honestly, it's not a question of if, but a question of when someone is going to try to hack your organization. And to prove this point, you know, I'll tell you that I can go, you know, into the cloud. I can get on AWS. I can create a virtual machine and just open a single port to the web that does nothing. It just listens. And I can just watch as IPs from Russia, China, Africa, every continent are just enumerating this. I see attempted exploits being sent over this. And you know what? Mm-hmm. I've had this port open for 20 minutes. So
the
internet can be like the Wild West. And that is why proactive security is so crucial, because it's going to happen.
Right.
And you have to be ready. And proactive security is how you make sure that you're ready.
Yeah, this is going to be a sort of escalating arms race, so to speak. Like it's not just going to go away one day, I imagine.
No, it isn't.
Yeah. So as we wrap up today, if our listeners want to know more about Luke Willardson or EmberSec, where can they go online?
Well, you can check out my LinkedIn profile or the EmberSec website. I think the EmberSec website is more interesting.
EmberSec.com, I imagine. Or
yes, mm-hmm. Thank you. And mm-hmm. we have some great blogs available, we're writing more. I'm currently working on a blog that discusses security within Microsoft Azure and Azure Active Directory, which should be ready within the coming weeks. I've got a bit more research to do, but there's tons of interesting blogs. We talk about all of our service offerings and, you know, the great crew that I work with. So really embersec.com is where you want to go.
Okay. And I just got a chat, from, Bradley, your PR person, that says embercybersecurity.com.
That's what, yes.
Okay. All right. With the assist.
That's what I meant to say.
Embercybersecurity.com. Okay, great. All right. Luke, thank you very much for joining me today. This was super informative and helpful, and I hope people get really excited about sort of getting into vulnerabilities.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you all for listening and watching. As always, if you enjoyed today's video, you can find many more on our YouTube page. Just go to youtube.com and type in CyberWork with InfoSec. Check out our collection of tutorials, interviews, and past webinars. If you'd rather have us in your ears during your workday, all of our videos are also available as audio podcasts. Just search CyberWork with InfoSec in your podcast catcher of choice. And as always, if you wouldn't mind, we would love a 5-star review and a five-star rating and a nice review on your platform of choice. It really has been helping, so we appreciate it. For a free month of the InfoSec Skills platform I discussed previously, just go to InfoSecInstitute.com/skills and sign up for an account. And in the coupon line, type the word CyberWork, all one word, all small letters, no spaces, and get your free month. Thank you once again to Luke Willardson and EmberSec, and thank you all for watching and listening. We will speak to you next week.